going to call to order the Conference Committee on House Bill 2594. Without the presence of our additional Senate member, we will be without a quorum, but I will convene us as a subcommittee of the Conference Committee for the purposes of taking testimony on the amendments of House Bill 2594. And so that is how we will operate today until we are joined by our fellow Senate member. We have a series of amendments to discuss on this bill, and I've received from notes from several groups and individuals that want to talk about the amendments. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think fundamentally, is there anybody here to testify in any way, shape, or form about the original bill on 2594? Okay, so we're all talking about the amendments today, and with that in mind, I'm going to go ahead and ask Commissioner Dennis Luke from Deschutes County and Jenny Scanlon from the Deschutes County Juvenile Department to come up. If you'd both come forward, we'll start there. And we'll move down the line.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
I provided a copy of my written testimony.
For the record, you
For the record, my name is Jenny Scanlon, and I'm the director of the Deschutes County Juvenile Community Justice Department.
Great, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to hear testimony from Deschutes County regarding an amendment to ORS 419C. The past year, as with many jurisdictions throughout the state, has been challenging as we cope with limited resources to serve a dynamic yet difficult juvenile population in Oregon. In particular, we have experienced budget deficits that have led to the closure of our juvenile courtroom, not rehiring our juvenile court referee position, and no funds to transport youth to the downtown courthouse located about 5 miles from our building. On July 1st of this year, Deschutes County implemented the use of video technology for juvenile proceedings with youth in the custody of our locked detention facility. The equipment was implemented after extensive research, including a bid process, a site visit, and thorough analysis of the equipment in partnership with the Circuit Court. The use of video technology with juveniles has created an interesting philosophical discussion among attorneys, judges, and youth practitioners in Deschutes County. While the existing statute does not prevent or preclude the use of telephone or closed-circuit television at initial appearances, the current language can easily be subject to interpretation, which has led to a variety of lengthy dialogues in our courtrooms. Additionally, discussion of potential tort claims against our juvenile department for false imprisonment in failing to transport youth to hearings has surfaced in response to current statute language. In my recent viewing of several juvenile hearings, I have been impressed with the high quality of our new technology. It allows for a meaningful process that is inclusive of all parties involved with the hearing. While bringing a youth personally before a judge is the optimal situation, I believe that the use of video technology is an acceptable alternative that does not compromise the integrity of the juvenile court proceeding or jeopardize the rights of the youth. In performing some research about video hearings across the state, I have discovered that many counties located in central and eastern Oregon have been conducting hearings by telephone and closed-circuit television for many years. The language in this amendment is an important issue that has a large fiscal impact, not only for Deschutes County, but for many of the smaller, more rural counties who spend countless hours transporting youthful offenders across long distances. It is my hope over the next few years that we will be able to reestablish our juvenile court, including the reopening of our juvenile courtroom and rehiring of our juvenile court referee position. However, as we continue to proactively manage the current reality of our financial limitations, we appreciate your consideration of this amendment. We believe it will clarify the statute to specifically allow for the use of video technology at initial appearances. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this matter.
Thank you very much, Ms. Scanlon. So I understand it. Is it the dash three amendments that are the Deschutes County amendments? Is that right? Or the dash? Now it's the dash five.
That's correct.
The dash five amendments. Okay. Dash five. Okay. Commissioner Luke, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dennis Luke, Deschutes County Commissioner. Deschutes County. Is in favor of both the dash four and the dash five amendments. dash five are ours, and dash four are coming in from the juvenile directors. And we would support both of those. Jenny Scanlon has not only worked in Deschutes County, she has experience in the juvenile in juvenile corrections in Colorado before she came to work for us. And holds a master's?
Yes.
Master's in
social work.
Thank you. We've been doing video arraignment mostly of adults in Deschutes County over the last few years. We're looking to expand the video arraignment facilities into all of our courtrooms, including the new one for the new judge that was just sworn in the end of June. And we will have similar equipment out at parole and probation, at the jail, and in the juvenile facility, so different people can testify in court when the judges so allow. As part of the development of that equipment, I took a personal tour along with the courts and our information technology people of the federal courthouse in Portland, federal courthouses in Las Vegas and Phoenix, and the circuit court in Phoenix. And we went to Las Vegas and Phoenix because that's where two of the vendors were that we were interviewing on installation of the equipment. It's used extensively in all those areas, and both the judges, both the federal and the state judges, told us that it saved time, it saved money, and in many cases allowed witnesses to be there that may not have been able to be there because of money. We believe it saves money not only for the courts, but for the law enforcement, for the transportation of those prisoners. It saves time. Because you don't have to, sometimes prisoners get transferred and then the judge is not able to hear that. Something else comes up and they have to go back and come back again. And it also helps very much with court security because it doesn't, you don't have those prisoners within the courthouse, and the it takes fewer corrections officers to monitor those prisoners. Because of costs, as was previously mentioned, the juvenile hearings have been moved to our circuit courthouse instead of from the juvenile facility. We believe that video arraignment of juveniles is allowed now, but there is some there's not a uniform opinion on that, and we believe we need this bill to clarify that to short-circuit any appeals of a case because of video arraignment. We'd like to make sure it's clarified in the law. Reduction of funding at all levels, at all judicial levels, has required us to make priority choices. And the question is, do we put money into transport of prisoners, or do we put money into programs? And we'd like to choose programs. We need that flexibility on the local level. As was mentioned earlier, I too believe that it's probably the best case scenario is to have the juvenile in front of the judge, but that's not always possible. But we will do everything we can whenever it is possible to have the juvenile before the judge, when the judge and the attorneys and the juvenile staff believe that is a necessary thing to happen. This bill, these amendments, has the support of our local judges, the county commissioners, and the juvenile staff, and we would hope the committee would act favorably on the dash four and dash five amendments.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Luke. Are there questions for either of these witnesses? Sure. Senator, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I had some questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Luke, I'm a little unclear because you say you support the dash four and the dash five, and I guess I should ask counsel. It's not both. It would be one or the other.
Chair members of the committee, we heard a little bit earlier from legislative counsel's office that this is not an and but an or. It's one or the other. We can't adopt both.
Okay. So
there'd be a conflict with each other.
Given that, Mr. Luke, we can't have both. So would it be that you support either or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, we need the dash five amendments. If the committee believes that the broader dash four amendments should be the policy of the state, then the dash four amendments will accomplish what we want to accomplish. But without the dash four amendments, we need the dash five amendments.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, if I could continue.
You may.
When you traveled around to look at this type of equipment, did you also do any study of states who are using video technology for juvenile detention hearings, for instance, Florida?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, we weren't looking at for the juvenile type arraignment. We were looking at the equipment itself. Mm-hmm. and how it was used and what the judges liked and didn't like about the different types of equipment arrangements, because they're all a little bit different. And so we weren't looking specifically at the video arraignment of juvenile.
So you didn't look at it then. Have you looked at it now? So have you done any research about how this works, doing video arraignments?
Mr. Chair,
and, you know, arraignment is kind of a strange word to use in juvenile proceedings. I understand that, and I'm sure
I'm used to Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I'm used to the wording for the adults, and I don't know have you done some research?
I have.
Would that be all right if she answered?
Yes, please.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, the research I did just was in the state of Oregon, and what my research concluded is that there are 9 counties in the state that are currently using video or telephone technology to hold juvenile types of hearings, whether it's an initial appearance all the way up through proceedings up to a trial. I found nowhere that's using it for a trial. So that was the research that I did. Those counties are all in central and eastern Oregon.
And Mr. Chair, could I ask one final question?
You may.
Thank you. Then, Ms. Scanlon, could you tell me, in the research you did with those 9 counties, what was the feedback on how the system worked and under what circumstances did they use it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, the feedback that I received is that there were several issues. There were some judges that were struggling with the use of the technology philosophically, and so therefore were choosing not to use the technology in juvenile cases. There were other situations where it was a convenience factor, especially with the more rural counties in eastern Oregon, where attorneys were having a difficult time making doing the travel time to be with the youth during the hearing. So there were also considerations for that. However, the majority of the counties that I talked with had the full support of their judges, their attorneys, their district attorneys in using the video technology.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Scanlon, Mr. Mm-hmm. Luke, and Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Ackerman and then Representative Crummell.
Yeah, so either of you, I noticed in your materials that there is an empty courtroom facility in the juvenile detention facility. Why can't you transport a circuit court judge from downtown Bend to the detention facility to use the empty courtroom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, that's not the choice of the county. That had been the choice of the court. But not only do you have to transport the judge, you have to transport the staff, you have to transport the records and everything that goes with it. And so the court is the current the juvenile referee up until June 30th became a circuit court judge. So not only did we lose our juvenile referee, there was a funding problem, of course, for the new judge we got and his staff, and they've moved that money. It's better spent to have his staff there. So it's more of a transportation problem for his staff and all the records, and it's easier to move the juveniles than it is to move all of those people.
Second question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. You already have the technology in place. Why are you seeking authority to do something you've already done?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I think both of us mentioned that we believe that the law allows this. But there have been some threats by different defense counsels that they were going to appeal cases, not on the merits of the case, but the simple fact that video technology was used as part of the case. And much like we did with the early in the session with the bill for Black Butte Ranch, we believe Black Butte Ranch had the authority, but we wanted clarification in the law. And so we are just asking for clarification so that there is no question that a case can be thrown out because video technology was used.
May I have one more?
You may.
I just want you to itemize for me what proceedings you propose to have to take place by video or telephonic communication. We've used a lot of different terms like initial appearance on the summons, contested adjudication. Could you kind of give me a laundry list of what proceedings you want to be facilitated by the technology?
I will let my coach and my witness answer, Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman. But first, I'd like to say, from my standpoint, and we worked, the Deschutes County Commissioners and our judges work very, very closely together on a lot of issues, and we get along really well. The judge is going to make the call on whether this technology will be used with a juvenile. I mean, we're not going to make the call as commissioners. She's not going to make the call as a juvenile director. The judge will make the call. So I will let her answer up to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, in terms of a laundry list for us, for Deschutes County and our needs, it relates to initial appearances when a youth is first brought in front of the court, specifically for youth that are detained in our detention facility. Our second priority need would be for review hearings for a youth that is out of home placement on the other side of the mountains, well, this side of the mountains, and after that, any type of hearing except for a trial. I would not have a priority order, but we would like to include every other hearing with the exception of a trial.
Last question.
Yes.
And in those proceedings which audio or visual technology would not be used, would the hearing take place downtown in the circuit court or at the detention facility?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, for us, we are in a situation where our juvenile courtroom will hopefully be open on Friday afternoons, and so for us, we would have it at our juvenile building.
Thank you.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, a couple of my questions were already asked by Representative Ackerman, but in the Dash 4 amendments, it talks about that a person may not appear. It gives that a person can appear by video technology, but then in subsection 2 it says that they can't appear there if the proceeding is a contested adjudication or if the person has been issued a summons under ORS 419C306 sub 2. And my question is, you must not be, I guess you're not considering an arraignment or a decision whether to detain or not detain as a contested adjudication. That's my first question. And my second question is, since ORS 419C306 sub 2 talks about the summons requiring a person to appear who have physical custody to appear and bring the youth before the court, and doesn't say anything about not being able to use the video technology. Don't the Dash A4s defeat your purpose?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, Deschutes County did not put together the fours, so I can't speak specifically to the fours except for to say that we would not, in terms of the arraignment that you were asking about, that we would not consider that a contested adjudication. We would only be looking at a situation where a youth would be going to trial. In regards to the other question you had, I wouldn't feel comfortable speaking to it because I know that the language regarding the summons is not an issue that we struggle with in Deschutes County. It relates to other counties in regards to their summonsing procedures, and it also affects Central and Eastern Oregon in terms of how often they would like to use the equipment for their types of hearings.
I believe that sponsors of the Dash 4 amendments will be following us in testimony.
That's true.
Anything
else?
Okay. No, that's fine.
Mr. Chair, if I might, a clarification for Representative Ackerman. The majority of the juvenile proceedings, when possible, will be held out at the juvenile facility on Fridays, but we did have a major murder trial that involved five juveniles, and, of course, that was in the circuit court because of a lot of different reasons.
I understand. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you,
thank you
both. Appreciate thank you. Your testimony. Next, I have Molly Rogers and Larry Oglesby to talk about the Dash 4 amendments. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Larry Oglesby. I'm director of the Marion County Juvenile Department and chair of the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association Legislative Committee. I just wanted to sort of give a brief overview of the Dash 4 amendments and the reasons for them and talk a little bit about their application. And then Ms. Rogers will talk about some specifics where this is particularly a difficult issue. We are in support of the A4 amendments. We worked with legislative council on these the last couple of days to take the Dash 3s and basically make them work for all of the counties. One of the issues that we tried to do was make it as clear as possible Part of doing that was consolidating all the provisions dealing with electronic hearings, which is, by definition, both telephonic and video in one place, so it's clear what's allowable. Currently in the statute, it's in 419C153, which is detention hearings. The Dash 3 amendments would put another section in the summons portion of the juvenile code, and we believed it would be better and more understandable to put it in one place, so that's why it's located in that fashion. With regard to the question of exclusions, the first is the contested adjudication, which basically is a trial in juvenile court, and that would be the only exclusion in terms of types of hearings, although as a matter of practice we always try to do those things in person wherever possible, and I'll talk a minute about the reasons why you wouldn't do them in person. The second part of the exclusion deals with persons who were summoned under 419C306. As part of the discussion went along, we heard concern that parents might not participate in hearings and might not be there. 306 requires parents who are summoned to be at these hearings, so that's why you have that second exclusion, to make certain the parents who have in fact been summoned are there in person to participate in the hearing of their young person. Secondly, with regard to that issue, we thought having it not as part of the summons section of the code simply made it easier for everybody to understand, and it was very clear in that regard. In terms of the problem in general, there are a limited number of detention facilities in Oregon. I believe it's 15 now. And so what you have is many issues of logistics, transportation, and cost related to that transportation. A number of years ago, when I first started in this business, we had a 5-county facility: Marion, Polk, Lynn, Benton, Yamhill, and Lincoln, actually a 6. And all of the pre-adjudication hearings, detention review hearings, were done by telephone from those counties. So this is not a new practice. It's something that's been done for a long time. And it's done for those reasons that of logistics, of security, where it's a short hearing, it's a reasonably pro forma hearing, although the court does have the ability to make decisions about release and those sorts of things. Defense counsel is involved in those hearings. Parents are involved in those hearings. They simply happen to be done electronically. Contested adjudications, which are the exclusion, I wanted to highlight that is not something that we would like to see done electronically. That is the most important part of the juvenile case, where the juvenile has the right to face his accusers, have the parents, the defense attorney there in person, and we feel very strongly that part should be excluded. This is an issue of statewide importance. Clackamas County, as an example, rents beds from Multnomah County Donnelly Long Facility, which is by freeway during traffic, a good hour transport, and there are sometimes cases of a particular security nature where they would prefer not to transport from East Portland to Oregon City. But certainly the more compelling cases are east of the mountains, where you have counties who have to transport youth 2 hours over the Blue Mountains in the snowstorm during the winter to a facility in Pendleton, or from a facility in Pendleton, to get the judge, to get the youth before the judge in person. So that's the most compelling, I think, reason that this is important to do. Again, it's not the norm, but the exception that these would be done, and it's for logistical reasons. And then lastly, I would just simply say that the experience that I believe that we've had is, including defense attorneys in most of the counties, that they have found these hearings to be satisfactory, both in terms of the quality of the decisions and in terms of the rights of the individuals being protected. So for those reasons, we would support the Dash 4 amendments on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Oglesby. Ms. Rogers?
Thank you, Chair Williams and committee. My name is Molly Rogers, and I'm currently the director of the Wasco County Department of Youth Services. And I'm also here representing as the co-chair of the Central and Eastern Oregon Juvenile Justice Consortium, which is 17 counties east of the mountains, including Deschutes. And we also support the Dash 4 amendments, or from the rural standpoint. And prior to becoming in Wasco County, I was the director of Wallowa County, which is one of the small rural counties that transports youth two hours over the Blue Mountains on sunny days and also in the wintertime. I gave some examples in my written testimony to explain when these hearings are very important to the rural counties. Again, I don't think we disagree that it's the best situation is to have the youth in front of the judge. But in the small circuit districts, judges aren't always in the counties, and so transporting the youth back up to Wallowa County, the youth could be in the courtroom, but the judge would still be on the telephone because he would be based out of Union County that day. So the youth would be in the courtroom, the judge would be heard from Union County, and also in the Wallowa County situation, many of the defense attorneys are located in La Grande, so they would go to Union County to the courtroom, and we would have basically the same situation, even though we had transported the youth back up to Wallowa County to be held in that courtroom. And so that was a compelling issue for us, is that I know we're trying to seek one thing, but logistically, the way even our district courts are, or the judicial districts are set up, it's still impractical to have the youth in front of the judge. I also want to talk a little bit about the cost. In the small rural counties in eastern Oregon, their detention budgets are not very large to begin with, and detention itself ranges anywhere from $105 to $155 a day. And transport from, again, I'll use Wallowa County as an example, is $100 one way for a transport. So the fiscal impact on that small of a county is literally threefold of the cost of one-night detention simply in the transportation of that youth for a hearing that can be often less than 15 minutes long, and then having to transport the youth back. We definitely agree that contested adjudications, the youth has the right and has the need to be in the courtroom with the judge and with their attorney right there. But in many of these other hearings, I believe that the attorneys and the youth can be represented and have adequate counsel and adequate time to meet with a counselor prior to the hearing, and can fully understand what the judge is explaining to them and what the judge is meaning when he's visiting with the youth on the phone or on video. I also now work with a regional detention facility called NORCOR, and it makes up of Wasco, Hood River, Sherman, and Gillam counties. And we use video technology in Wasco County, and it has become very much a standard as part of the adult arraignments, and then we do the juvenile in custodies. Again, all the parties have been satisfied with that. The families are very comfortable with that. There hasn't been any objections at the local level, and if there were objections, I have no doubt that we would try to make arrangements, because it isn't a long distance. But and the attorneys have been comfortable with it, and they have not brought up the same issues. They have the capacity to go out to the detention facility and meet with the youth beforehand, and they know every day what time the hearings are. So it's become very routine, and I think has been very successful in Wasco County to have the video in custodies done with juveniles on video. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you both very much. Are there questions from the panel? Mm-hmm. Counsel?
Mr. Ogle, the bill doesn't apply here. If the proceeding is a contested adjudication, what do you mean by a contested adjudication, and what would you consider not to be a contested adjudication?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, counsel, contested adjudication would be a full-blown trial where the youth has denied the allegations and a defense is put on his behalf by counsel. A non-contested adjudication would be a circumstance where there may have been a plea bargain worked out with the deputy district attorney. The youth will admit to the allegation, and oftentimes disposition actually occurs in the same hearing. It's usually a fairly short hearing, but it's not a dispute over the facts in the case. It's basically a question of the court taking jurisdiction, which requires an adjudication hearing for them to take jurisdiction and place that youth on probation, and then moving into whatever the appropriate disposition would be. Those hearings could be anywhere from 5 minutes to 15 or 20 minutes, but they're not a full-blown trial.
Senator Walker.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Oglesby, you indicated that the parties expressed that they've been happy with this arrangement using video. But my question is, and I understood that Ms. Rogers also indicated that the attorneys were happy. Are we talking about the defense attorneys who represent the youth? They're expressing that they're, both of you could answer that, they're expressing they're okay with this arrangement?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Walker, I was speaking of both defense attorneys and prosecutors, deputy district attorneys typically, who prosecute these cases. Normally, where these kind of hearings are held, there is agreement among the parties, including both defense and prosecution, and certainly the judge and the juvenile department all participate in that discussion, that dialogue about what it makes, when it makes the most sense to do that kind of a hearing. Ultimately, it's a judge's call in terms of whether it's telephonic or not. But our experience has been both prosecutors and defense attorneys have been supportive of this process.
Mr. Chair and Senator Walker, also, I would concur with that in our situation, the defense attorneys have been very cooperative and I believe have been supportive. I have not heard different from them and have had conversations with numerous ones. And on rare occasion, there has been a discussion on a specific youth on having that youth in front of the court, but that's usually a discussion between my juvenile counselor as well as the defense attorney, and they both find a reason on why that needs to happen at that time and why that's appropriate, as well as when I worked in Wallowa County, the defense attorneys, they physically couldn't be with the youth, and so they were pleased with having the telephonic or video hearings.
Mr. Chair, if I could continue. That raises a couple of other questions that I had in my mind, and I'm not sure which one I want to take first, but I guess the first one is, how would a youth be able to talk off the record in confidence with their counsel if their counsel is not present with them in the same room? One's on video and one's in the courtroom.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Walker, the practice in our county, and I think it's fairly typical, is that defense lawyers meet with their clients prior to the hearings, and so they have basically gone over what the issues are, what the expectations are. Obviously, in some hearings, something will come up you don't anticipate. I would expect, I couldn't tell this specifically, but I would expect that they would go off the record and give the opportunity for the defense attorney to call his client or whatever to talk about it before they went back on the record, or to basically set the hearing over, unless it had to be done that day. If it was like a detention review hearing that was required by statute to be done that day, then they would have to complete it. But clearly, if the defense attorney and the youth had questions that they needed to talk about in private, my expectation would be the court would grant them the ability to do that.
Okay. And then I think that leads into my other question, which is, at any time is a defense attorney allowed to, you know, the judge has made a decision that, yeah, we're going to hold this by video, and the defense attorney talks with his client, decides, you know, this isn't really appropriate for this juvenile. We'd rather do this in court. So does the defense attorney have the opportunity to discuss with the judge that this is not really an appropriate hearing by telephone or video, and let's do an in-court hearing? Is there that opportunity?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Walker, I couldn't say with certainty that's true in every case. What I can say is that my understanding is in most counties, when you're talking about juvenile matters, there's lots of conversation between the juvenile department, the deputy district attorney, and the defense counsel before it ever gets to court. So if there are issues like that are going to be brought up, typically my staff would bring that up with the court and say, this issue has been scheduled in this fashion. There's an issue here that we had asked the court to take a look at. But, you know, if there's communication between the parties, there ought not to be a circumstance where they wouldn't have that opportunity.
And Ms. Rogers, you have experience on the east side of the mountains. Is that something you've experienced?
Ms. Williamson, Senator Walker, the issue on the eastern side of the mountains is that the defense attorneys at the initial detention hearing have not been able to do that because of timelines. Their statutory requirement to have 24 hours review of detention once a youth is placed in detention. If you transport a youth from either Malheur, Grant, Baker, Wallowa, Harney, or any of those very rural eastern counties, you're talking a minimum of 2 hours to the detention facility. And the next morning, if the youth goes in those very small counties that do not have judges every day, you set it on the other county's court docket time. And so they determine the time of the hearing, and no one really has an opportunity to request anything other than having that initial detention review. Nor is it logistically possible to, if they set the hearing at 9 o'clock in the morning, to drive back over and get that youth. And so,
but it is possible to negotiate that on other types of hearings that you indicated that you use this procedure on.
Yes, if it is other than the initial detention review that is statutorily required within a very specific timeline, yes, there is times that, and again, it was communication. It was usually a youth that maybe wasn't getting the point, and so wanted the judge to have that one-on-one personal contact, and also having a judge that likes that one-on-one personal contact. But that was a very deliberate decision beforehand.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. In committee, I'm running into a conflict as well at 4 o'clock, and I want to give the opponents of the amendment some time before we have to adjourn for the day. As it's obvious, I think, to committee members and those in the room, we're not going to resolve this today for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that we don't have a quorum of the Senate here, even if we chose to. And I think the committee is hearing good information, but we'll need an opportunity to digest that a little bit. So if I could ask you two to withdraw, but perhaps wait around in case my colleagues to my left haven't had an opportunity to ask you some questions. I do want to give some record time to the opponents of the measure as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ingrid, do you want to come forward with your witness? And do we have somebody else who's here? Yeah, if you want to come up as well. Yeah, please. All of you come on up. And I apologize again that we started late because of an absence issue, and now we're going to have to finish because of my schedule conflict. But we'll give you an opportunity to make your points, and you're all excellent professionals, and I know you'll be succinct and right to what we need to hear.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Williams. My name is Angela Sherbo. I'm a senior attorney with the Juvenile Rights Project. If I really heard you correctly, I just withdraw at this moment in terms of time. But let me very briefly say we presented written testimony that goes to both our belief about the constitutionality of these amendments and their lack of specificity. What I want to talk to you now about is personal experience and policy and kids. I've appeared in juvenile courts in Boston, in rural eastern Kentucky, in Louisville, Kentucky, in Portland, in Salem, and I will tell you that the one thing all of those places and all of those judges and all of that court personnel have in common is the belief that by being there, they may make a difference. Not in every youth's life, but in some. And that is the essence of the difference between juvenile court and adult court. So all of the conversation about what works in arraignments for adults is reasonable to talk about. And I'm not unsympathetic to the cost problems and the transportation problems, but it doesn't get to the essence of the policy of this state, which is to treat juveniles differently, to have a separate juvenile court proceeding at which many of the due process protections that adults have do not apply. Juveniles are not entitled to jury trials. Juveniles cannot make bail, and that is because they are presumed to have special solicitude by that separate juvenile court system. And I want to tell you, having sat next to kids who are accused of doing something wrong, and the children we're talking about in these amendments are not the older youth, and they're not the kids charged with serious crimes. Those kids are in Measure 11 territory, and they're arraigned like adults. We're talking about 12 to 15-year-olds or 15 and older who've committed a very, not a serious or not nearly as serious a crime. It is so important at the first proceeding and thereafter, but I think at the first proceeding, for some of that solemnity and gravity of the court to be, for the kid to come in, to have to stand up when the judge comes in, to have to say, Your Honor, to see his or her own parents there. That's part of what we hope is part of the rehabilitation process and part of what deters kids. We have a very large number of only one-timers. The vast majority of kids who are in juvenile court are there once, and they never come back. then there's the small group that are the repeat offenders and the serious kids. As important as it is for the kid to observe and feel that this is different, this is court, there's a serious decision made here about whether I'm going home or whether I'm staying in jail, and the presumption in the juvenile court is for release. It's equally as important for the judge to observe that child and to know when that child answers a question, whether the child has tears in his eyes or whether he's rolling his eyes. Those are the sort of things that telephone won't do for you, and I don't think that what I understand about the video capabilities for my colleagues in Deschutes County won't do it for you either. I think that with respect specifically to these amendments, they continue to leave many questions unanswered. The use of the word person rather than the use of the word youth implies that what we're talking about are the parents. That's who this summons provision is directed at, the person having custody of the child. These are, that's the dash three that I'm talking about. Sorry.
But I think they fixed that in the dash fives.
Well, they didn't fix the people. I think they fixed the... Oh, did they? Sorry. Mm-hmm. And the other issue, I think, too, is which proceedings do these apply to? The testimony has been the intent or the desire from Deschutes County is for that very first hearing, but that at least the dash fours are not limited to that. There are a number of other incredibly serious proceedings in juvenile court. For instance, waiver doesn't appear to be excluded from these amendments. That's the decision about whether to try someone as an adult, an individualized decision in front of a judge. That's not a contested adjudication. It's typically contested, but it is not a contested adjudication. There are contested dispositions where the issue is whether or not the child's going to be incarcerated. They may have pled to the charge, but the issue that could take days is whether or not there's some sort of community treatment, some means to keep the kid in the community. So I don't think we're not nearly specific enough yet, even if we're to go down this road. And I would really urge the committee not to go down this road, and at the very least to permit those of us who are sort of intimately involved with this to continue to confer with one another and very possibly even to defer it to the Law Commission during the interim. Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Williams and committee members. I'm Carla Nash, Senior Staff Attorney with Crabtree and Ramsdorf in Bend. We're the Public Defender's Office, and we do a great deal of the juvenile court work. The committee, I believe, has my letter also signed on by Tom Crabtree and Terry Ramsdorf. I won't dwell on that too much. I would like to focus that in all of our years of experience, that initial appearance face-to-face before a judge that's 10 feet away, asking the child to state what they do with their day, what's their level of parental or adult supervision, and stressing to them the severity of the charge has a real impact. We've seen problems with the implementation initially in Deschutes County. There were issues where the matters actually weren't being recorded the first week or two. Some of that may be able to be squared away. And there are also practical problems. The first juvenile I saw being arraigned in this manner before my colleague Terry Ramsdorf seemed unsure of where to look, and she just kind of had this appearance that she was looking into space. In terms of having all the parties there, while the child's attorney may choose to go out to the facility to appear with the child where the parents are likely to appear, not all will, certainly. In terms of any appearance face-to-face before the victims or their parents, that's truly not going to happen, as they'll be on the other end appearing from the courtroom. For Deschutes County particularly, I believe the cost savings here are de minimis, and we're really talking about a judge taking 15 minutes to go round trip. Certainly, as defense counsel, we have no objection to the matter being recorded from downtown, and court staff could appear from that end to, you know, run the tape recording devices or videotaping devices, or simply the court could operate those themselves from the juvenile facility, where there is certainly the courtroom that's operational and will continue to be used at least on Friday afternoons. I understand that the Dash 5 amendments seek to clean up kind of the language from the Dash 3 and we're really talking about the Dash 4 and the Dash 5 amendments before this committee. We particularly object to the Dash 4, which seeks to be much, much broader. I'm hearing that in more rural areas there seems to be more of a problem with the transport. Certainly when youth are appearing from a standpoint of being in OIA custody, a state training school, or another program, it may make sense to stipulate to the appearance and for an initial appearance and appraisal of, you know, potential consequences and so forth. Their release decision isn't, you know, such an issue because they're already being held on another matter. I believe currently, as represented in our letter, there is not the lawful basis for having the initial hearings conducted by telecommunication, and certainly that's the reason for the proposed amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. I would encourage the parties, since we're going to have a little bit of time here before this gets reset for another conference committee, to converse with one another and determine whether or not there's some place to go. I'm not sure, given Juvenile Rights Project's assertion of the constitutionality issue, which I intend to inquire with my own team of lawyers in the basement of this building, that there may be any room for movement there, but I would encourage you to at least explore that possibility. The one question that I had, and it's not asking me to discount the personal and anecdotal experiences of all of you who've had considerable experience in this area, or the information that you presented. I was interested to see if anybody actually had any data from any study, any scientific study, that suggested in any way, shape, or form that an appearance in front of the judge, which we intuitively would believe would be the best option, whether or not anybody's seen any data or if there have been any studies to determine whether there's been an impact with a higher rate of recidivism, for example, for juveniles who don't appear in front of a judge versus those who do. And I don't know if there is such a study. And again, it's not to discount the anecdotal stuff, because sometimes that's all we've got to go on. But I think it's sort of an interesting question, because I think we have a normal tendency to sort of use our gut instincts on things like this. But, you know, if there was a time when we thought halfway houses and group homes were a smart idea too, and I think the research has demonstrated that it's not terribly effective. So I just wonder whether or not there's any, if you're aware of any information on that. Okay.
Mr. Chair. Just a moment. I had written the same question down, but the other part to that would be, has there been a difference in the release upon first adjudication? So when a juvenile first appears before a judge, are they less likely to be released on that first appearance when they appear by video or other means? And that was of concern to me as well.
It would be interesting if anybody had any data, and I don't know that any exists.
Well, Chair Williams, Senator Walker, that's certainly something that I will look for.
Yeah, and I'd encourage the proponents who have access to various research sources to look as well. And I'd encourage you, again, I apologize for having to limit the questions. I want to encourage the parties to talk to the members of the conference committee, but I do have a 4 o'clock that I'm now late for. But I do appreciate you coming over and presenting your testimony, and we'll stand adjourned until such time that we've posted a reconvening of the conference committee.